2, and this morning I want to start by rereading a small section of that passage. You got the impression through that chapter that the state of Israel was disastrous. Lots of bad things going on. I'm going to reread a short portion of Ezekiel 22, starting in verse 23. "And the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, say to her, You are a land that is not cleansed or rained on in the day of indignation. The conspiracy of her prophets is in her midst like a roaring lion tearing the prey. They have devoured people. They have taken treasure and precious things. They have made many widows in her midst. Her priests have violated my laws and profaned my holy things. They have not distinguished between holy and unholy, nor have they made known the difference between unclean and clean. And they have hidden their eyes from my Sabbaths, so that I am profaned among them. Her princes in her midst are like wolves tearing the prey, to shed blood, to destroy people, and to get dishonest gain. Her prophets plastered them with untempered mortar, seeing false visions and divining lies for them. Thus says the Lord God, when the Lord had not spoken, the people of the land have used oppressions, committed robbery, and mistreated the poor and needy, and they wrongfully oppressed the stranger. Verse 30. So, this is the Lord speaking, I sought for a man among them who would make a wall and stand in the gap before me on behalf of the land, that I should not destroy it. But I found no one. Therefore, I have poured out my indignation on them. I have consumed them with the fire of my wrath, and I have recompensed their deeds on their own heads, says the Lord." God's people were struggling mightily and failing. They were all failing, every single one of them, and basically no exceptions. There were false teachers leading the people astray. They told the people that God was saying things that God didn't actually say. There were the priests. They were evidently violating God's laws. They were profaning the holy things. They confused the people to the point that the people could no longer see the difference between right and wrong. This was the situation. The royalty, the kings and princes, they were violent and destructive, shedding innocent blood. It might be easy to read about this situation, it being so far in the distance, and feel pretty removed from it. But these are the people through which the Messiah came, through which the church ultimately came. And so let's not feel completely removed. So God looked on this situation, and He looked for someone to help. He says, I looked for someone to stand in the gap, but He found no one. What does that mean? It means that God looked for someone who could intervene on behalf of this people. All this wickedness going on, God needed someone to step forward. God was looking for someone who could deflect and absorb the wrath of God. The people deserved to be punished. God was looking for someone to step forward and deflect that punishment. God was looking for someone who could lead. But God found no one. Hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people maybe, God found no one. No prophet, no priest, no king, no one was worthy or able to lead the people in the path of righteousness. A really sad situation. This is a situation that happened to the children of Israel. It must be avoided in the church. This morning, I would like to talk about church leadership in official capacities, but also in unofficial capacities. So I know for some of you, when you hear church leadership, you think to yourself, well, that's not me. I can take a break during this lesson. I understand that. I know some of you are thinking, I am not a church leader. This lesson is really not for me. I want to ask you to, at least for now, reconsider that idea. Maybe I can convince you that maybe you are a church leader. So in this lesson, there's basically three topics that we need to talk about. Why the church needs leaders, who can be a leader, and how exactly do you become a leader in the church. And this does matter. If you doubt for a minute whether or not this topic matters, again, think about the situation with the children of Israel. Nobody was willing to lead. No one would deflect or absorb the wrath of God, and so all of the people absorbed it. To begin with, why does the church need leaders in the first place? Maybe this feels like an obvious question, but another way of asking this is, what do leaders in the church do that wouldn't otherwise be done? That's really what we're asking. What do leaders in the church do that otherwise wouldn't be done without those leaders? I can think of three things, three reasons that the church needs leaders. The first thing is this: the church needs examples to follow. People in the church need an ideal to follow. This is one of the things that church leaders do. Church leaders set an example for other people to imitate. The obvious ideal is Jesus. We follow Jesus above all others, but it sure helps to have living, breathing examples right in front of us as well. A leader in the church shows other Christians what it means to be a Christian and what it takes to live like Christ. When I think of people in the Bible who were leaders to Christian people, the obvious example of Christ, but another example is Paul himself. Think about some of the things that the Apostle Paul said. I've never said these things, but these are things that the Apostle Paul said, being a leader among the church. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 16, I urge you, imitate me. That's what Paul said. I am telling you, please imitate me. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1, imitate me, just as I also imitate Christ. Philippians chapter 3, verse 17, brethren, join in following my example, and note those who so walk as you have for us a pattern. This is sort of an interesting thing to consider. Have you ever said to someone as they're seeking to be a Christian, well, it's simple. You just need to be like me. Just be like me, and you will be on the right track. Now, I'm saying that as if it would be a silly thing to say, but that's apparently not true. That is exactly what Paul said to do. Paul told all these people, you want to know how to be a Christian? Be like me. Now, maybe you wouldn't say it in those words, but do you think that? Do you believe that? Do you have a life where it would be appropriate to say to someone, if you want to know what it takes to be a Christian, just follow me. Just follow my example. Are you willing to do that? That's one of the things that church leaders must do. This is on the side of official leadership, talking about elders. This is one of the things that elders are expected to do. 1 Peter chapter 5, 2 and 3, shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion but willingly, not for dishonest gain but eagerly. Verse 3, not as being lords over the flock entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. This is one of the things, one of the ways that elders are supposed to lead. They're supposed to lead by example. And maybe they don't say, imitate me as I imitate Christ, like Paul said. But yet that idea is still supposed to be true. When it comes to leaders being examples, think about this. Of all the things that are natural to being a human, I think somewhere near the top of the list is imitation. How many of your thoughts, behaviors, and actions are original to you? How many of your thoughts, behaviors, actions, even words, your speech, how much of that is original to you? None. None. You don't do anything or think anything or say anything that you came up with on your own. The way that you think, the way that you learn to think, you learned that from someone. Obviously, you, through the course of time, mature and make those things your own. But it all started from somewhere else. For most of you, the way that you think and speak started with your parents. Imitation is very natural. I have learned a lot about myself by watching our son Nate. He says a lot of things, and I'll think to myself, well, where'd he get that? Why would you say that? Well, he gets it from me. I have learned that sometimes, apparently at home, I don't exactly season my speech with salt. And Nate will sometimes say things to me or Joanna, and I'll think to myself, what gives you the right to talk to me like that? And I realize that probably he's imitating someone, most likely me. Imitation is very natural. People would like to imitate other people. You imitate other people even when you mean not to. Leadership includes being an example. So that's one part, one reason the church needs leadership. That's one thing that leaders do. They set an example to other people. Something else that leaders do. The church needs leaders because the church needs strong voices. So sometimes as a leader, you're spending most of your time setting an example. But there are other times where the church needs people to be strong voices. And I mean strong voices in a pretty precise way. I don't necessarily mean that the church needs loud voices, but I do think the church needs strong voices. What I mean by that is people who are stable. People who have unwavering convictions. Leaders provide stability. Leaders are willing to say the right thing, even when everyone else is saying the wrong thing. This is what I mean by being a strong voice, a stable voice, a convicted, dependable voice. This is one of the things that leaders do. A leader will say something when no one else will say anything. This is part of the problem that we had with the children of Israel in Ezekiel chapter 22. I'm sure somebody knew that things had gone wrong. I'm sure somebody knew that the country was a disaster. And yet you get the feeling that nobody would step forward and try to fix the problem. You get the feeling that no one would speak out against these crimes, against the poor, against the innocent. They didn't have leaders. In the church, we can't allow that problem to exist. The church needs leaders because the church needs examples to follow, because the church needs these strong, stable, convicted voices. Another reason that the church needs leadership is for accountability. People in the church, all of us, every one of us needs to be held accountable at times. And I think this topic especially relates to the importance of developing official leadership. You don't need to be an elder to be an example. You don't need to be an elder to be a strong, stable, convicted voice. But when it comes to accountability, this is more on the side of official leadership, especially thinking about the eldership. One of the reasons that a church should be working forward to maintaining and developing elders is because of accountability, so that when an issue comes up, someone is there to address that issue. This is exactly what the Apostle Paul said to Titus in Titus chapter 1, verses 10 and 11. In this passage, Paul had just told Titus, I'm leaving you in Crete so that you can set in order the things that are lacking, so that you can establish elders in every city, just like I've told you to. And here's the reason why. Titus chapter 1, 10 and 11. This is why. Because there are many insubordinate, both idle talkers and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision, whose mouths must be stopped, who subvert whole households, teaching things which they ought not, for the sake of dishonest gain. When no one is in charge, so we're talking about the importance of accountability. When no one is in charge, problems linger. That's just a fact. When no one is in charge, problems linger. When no one is responsible for solving those problems, problems often don't get solved. And this is a real issue. This is not a hypothetical statement. This is a real issue. I'm sure all of you are familiar with situations that you could name right now where an issue existed, no one was in charge of solving that issue, and so it just never got solved. And this kind of thing absolutely happens in churches too. A common problem in churches that lack formal leadership is when an issue comes up, no one's really responsible for fixing it, and so it doesn't ever get fixed. If you want a real live example of this, think about the judges. Israel floundered and flopped without the leadership of the judges. And so the book of Judges says this very thing. Judges 2, verses 18 and 19. And when the Lord raised up judges for them, the Lord was with the judge and delivered them out of the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. For the Lord was moved to pity by their groaning because of those who oppressed them and harassed them. And it came to pass that when the judge was dead, that they reverted and behaved more corruptly than their fathers by following other gods to serve them and bow down to them. They did not cease from doing their own in their own stubborn way. So, pretty simple cause and effect. When an organization is without leadership, problems linger. This is one of the very important reasons that the church needs leadership. It's for accountability. Church leaders don't always need to exercise this authority. Maybe periods of time go by where there aren't issues that need to be solved. But this is one of the reasons that leaders do need to exist in the church. So, these are the three reasons that the church needs leaders. The church needs leaders to set an example. The church needs leaders to be accountable for the health of the church. And the church needs leaders to be that strong voice, to speak the truth. So, next question I want to answer this morning. Who can be a leader? This is the part of the lesson where a lot of people would be inclined to say, I don't know, but it's not me. Not me. We, at Cox College, we have this thing called the Faculty Senate. And it's basically an organization of faculty, which is empowered in some ways to contribute to the government of the college, right? So everybody wants to be on the Faculty Senate, okay? Lots of people want to be on the Faculty Senate. But as the semester goes by, fewer and fewer people attend the Faculty Senate. But the first issue that you immediately see, everybody wants to be on the Senate, people sign up for it. First day of Senate, it's time to inaugurate a leader. You know how many people volunteer for that? Zero. Exactly zero. Every single semester. Nobody signs up to be it. And this is why it's important to talk about leadership in the church. For most people, and this isn't a crime, this is not a sin, most people would rather not be a leader. And most of the time, that's fine, right? Most people would rather not be a leader, and I should say a good part of the time, that's fine. Because hopefully somebody will be a leader, but that's not always the case. Some people just don't see themselves as a leader. And there's some parts of that that are okay, some parts that are not okay, because here's the reality. The reality is you are a leader whether you want to be or not. You're a leader whether you want to be or not. You're a leader on some level, no matter what role you have in the church, no matter what role you have in the home. You are probably a leader to somebody, regardless of how mature or inexperienced you are in spiritual things. I guarantee you, somebody is watching you. Somebody is imitating you, whether they mean to or not. And so choosing deliberately not to be a leader can be quite dangerous. Sometimes choosing not to be a leader could be just the result of laziness. Now, if you're someone who sees yourself as a non-leader, I'm not saying you're lazy, but I'm saying that can be the cause sometimes. Sometimes people choose not to be a leader just because they don't want to commit the time to it. Some people choose not to be a leader because of fear of responsibility. And sometimes people choose not to be a leader really just because they have a misunderstanding about what it means to even be a leader. Everybody is a leader in some capacity. You lead somebody, whether you want to or not, whether you mean to or not. Everyone is a leader in setting an example to someone else. Maybe it's to your children. Maybe it's to your siblings. There is somebody watching you that wants to be like you, or at least imitate some part of your behaviors. And this idea of leading other people, of being a leader, is true whether you are serving in an official capacity, like as an elder, deacon, an evangelist, or if you're serving in the church in a completely unofficial capacity. You're a leader one way or the other. So who can be a leader? That's probably not even a real question, because everyone is a leader in some way or another. It doesn't matter your age, your gender, or anything. Speaking about gender, sometimes when we think about leadership in the church, maybe we pigeonhole men as being the only people who were ever leaders or are leaders in the church, but of course that's not true at all. You think about women in the church who served in very important capacities. Leaders in the church often included women. Again, not in an official capacity, but in an important capacity. Romans chapter 16 lists several women who were very important in leading the church. Romans chapter 16, starting in verse 1, Paul says, I commend to you Phoebe, our sister, who is a servant of the church in Cenchrea, that you receive her in the Lord in a manner worthy of the saints, and assist her in whatever business she has need of you. For indeed, she has been a helper of many and of myself also. We think of her as a servant, but in being a servant, she was also leading. She was working and serving and setting an example to other people. Verse 3, greet Priscilla and Aquila, my fellow workers in Christ Jesus, who risked their own necks for my life, to whom not only I gave thanks, but I also to all the churches of the Gentiles. Verse 5, likewise we greet the church that is in their house. And then skipping to verse 6, greet Mary, who labored much with us. Greet Andronicus and Junia, my fellow countrymen and fellow prisoners who are of note among the apostles, who were also in Christ before me. A long list of individuals, the point I want to make is that there are several women included among these individuals who were quite important in their respective congregations. These women are mentioned by name for their special role in the church. They weren't elders, they weren't evangelists, and yet they were leading. They were leading in some way. They set an example, they showed conviction, and at times, maybe they assumed even a little accountability when there were issues that needed to be dealt with. So that's how women served as leaders in the New Testament. Of course, men also serve regularly as leaders in the same way, with the added responsibility of also serving as official leaders, as elders, deacons, and evangelists. So let's give our attention to this for just a minute, because this is also very important. We're talking about leadership in a pretty broad sense, but a piece of leadership does include the role of elders, deacons, and evangelists. Formal leadership in the church is an important part of God's plan for the church. A church that is without elders has not necessarily done something wrong, but that is not the place where the church should stay. This is the goal, to have elders, to have official leadership designated and accountable for the leadership of the church. Formal leadership has a purpose. Elders feed, elders lead, and doing these two things, they assume accountability for the health of the flock and every member in the church. When you think of formal leadership in the church, they are problem solvers. Again, 1 Timothy chapter 1, verses 10 and 11. There are many insubordinate, idle talkers. What does Paul say about them? Their mouths must be stopped. And assumed in that is elders, appointed as the leaders of congregations, are personally responsible for making sure that happens. So we've talked about why the church needs leaders. We've talked about how every person in the church serves in some type of leadership capacity. The last thing I want to talk about this morning is how you can become a leader if you don't see yourself as a leader already. The first thing to say is really a message to parents. A person who develops into a leader can get a really big step forward if parents are deliberate in training them up to be a leader. And here's what I mean by that. I got really tired of hearing this as a child. I got sick of it. There was two things Dad said all the time, and I got so tired of hearing it. He said, I'm raising you to be a leader, and you'd better marry a good woman in the church. He said that so many times in so many different ways in so many different contexts. I got tired of hearing it. But when you think about it, those are probably two of the most important things that you can teach a child. Be a leader and make sure you marry the right person. If you get those two things right, life is so much easier. So what exactly is the message that a parent should convey their children that will help them take the steps in becoming a church leader? Children must be taught to make their own decisions and make their own way. When a child is young, you teach them what to do, you tell them what to do. But eventually the goal is to teach them how to make their own decisions and the context they should use for making those decisions. A child has to learn, and I think maybe this is the big message that maybe my dad was trying to tell me. A child has to learn to defy the negative influences around them and make positive, spiritual, righteous decisions. Leadership involves encouraging, when appropriate, but also acknowledging when things are wrong. These are the lessons that a parent should instill in their children. You learn to make your own decisions and do the right thing, even if everyone else is wrong. I know as a parent, you all have had this experience before, where you see your child in a situation where other people are making bad decisions, but your child makes the right decision. I mean, isn't that one of the most satisfying experiences as a parent? It satisfies us. It satisfies God. That's part of being a leader. So, your parents maybe did you a favor in the direction of becoming a church leader, but obviously there's a point where you decide to be a leader on your own. Even though I've already told you, and I absolutely believe you're a leader whether you want to be or not, and whether you mean to be or not, really being effective as a leader requires acknowledging that and being completely committed to it. So, this is not some grand truth that you couldn't figure out on your own. But being a good leader, becoming a leader, means deciding to do it and deciding to do a good job. Some people just refuse to be a leader. There are some people who would rather watch the world burn down to the ground than to step forward and present a solution. When you think of Moses, did Moses really want to be a leader? Did Moses want to be a leader or not? Nope. Moses would have preferred not to be a leader. And I know that there's a lot of us that maybe fit into that category. You'd really just rather not be a leader. Moses wasn't committed at first. Exodus chapter 4, verses 10 through 12. Then Moses said to the Lord, "Oh, my Lord, I'm not eloquent, neither before nor since you spoke to me, your servant." So basically Moses just said, "I'm not a good speaker. I'm not now, and I never was. I am slow of speech and slow of tongue." In other words, Moses is saying, "God, I'm just not a good talker, and therefore I can't be a good leader." And so the Lord said to him, "Who made man's mouth? Who makes the mute, the deaf, the seeing, or the blind? Have not I, the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall say." Pretty simple principle. If you're in a position that you need to lead, just do it. Don't make excuses to God. God made your mouth. He made your mind. He made your hands. God can enable you to do whatever needs to be done. But one thing God won't make you do, He won't make you step forward to be a leader. Sometimes He'll push us along and prod us and poke us in that direction. But if you want to resist God, He'll let you do that. He'll find somebody else. But don't make excuses about not being leadership material. You are a leader, and God will enable you to do whatever He needs you to do. So here's the moral of the story when it comes to becoming a leader. We can become committed to being a leader, even if we're not at the moment. We can become leadership material, even if we don't think we are. Really, being a leader just requires stepping forward to lead and letting God take control of the situation. So here's how I'd like to close. We got this story in the book of Ezekiel where God just needed somebody to step forward, and nobody would. In Isaiah chapter 6, we find the opposite. Isaiah chapter 6, verse 8. "Also I heard the voice of the Lord saying, 'Who shall I send, and who will go for us?' Then I said, 'Here am I, send me.'" Will you lead for the Lord? Will you take hold of the responsibilities that you have in leading the church, whether in official capacities or unofficial capacities? Someone is admiring you and wants to imitate you. Will you lead and be a good example? Are you willing to step forward as a leader and be the strong, stable, convicted voice that helps keep things under control when maybe things aren't going so well? Are you willing to take a level of accountability and stand in the gap? Will you take a little blame even when it's not your fault? Will you take the lead even if you don't think it's your business? These are the kinds of things that leaders must be willing to do. Thank you for giving me your attention this morning. Hopefully I said something that inspires you today to take on a role that maybe you've never taken before. Eddie, you have a closing number for us? 603. If anyone has a need, we can deal with that as we stand and sing.